Melissa Fretwell will present with the title, Are You With Me? Disabilities, Compassion, and Community. And Melissa has definitely asked for a brief introduction, and I have it in two sentences. Melissa Fretwell is currently the pastor of Mount Bethel United Methodist Church. She has a wealth of experience in the field of special education, and in her words, quote, she has never run for election, but we can simply call her the mayor, end quote. Melissa.
I invite you to pray with me. Good morning, God, Jesus, and Holy Spirit. You are our holy friends. We know that I ain't supposed to be in this space. We know that I never took a desk in the study room, and we know that I ran for the first four semesters to not be caught. And we know it has taken a lot of people to get me to this point, and a lot of them are here today, and that is good, and I thank you. Yet here we stand. Oh, sugar, honey, and iced tea, what are we going to do? Well, Melissa, first you're going to tell them your story, and then you're going to tell them what we have to say, and then you're going to tell them what the people who have come before you have to say, and then you're going to tell them what to do. Now, wait a minute, holy friends. You know, I can't get letters into words and words into sentences and sentences into paragraphs and paragraphs into pages and do it in like less than 17 minutes, which is why I have to talk really fast. Come on, friends, ain't there another way? Yeah, Melissa. So you're going to do what we've done and just tell them using ordinary stuff. You mean the bathroom stuff? Yeah, everyone uses the bathroom. Okay. But haven't you noticed they really don't know what to do with me here? And they're wondering with squirming expectation what I'm going to share? Melissa, we know. And we're telling them to just sit back and listen deeply. It'll only be 17 minutes-ish, maybe a little longer, and all will be well. And by the way, Melissa, we are going to do this together. So let it be so, and let Jesus lead the way. During my first year at this academy, and when I say the academy, I mean higher ed, but in this academy or this institution, I said, I am here for 1 year and 1 year only. Raise your hand if you heard that. Look at that. Yeah, what I did not share was that for about 10 years, our holy friends allowed me to drag my feet and sit 1.3 miles north of this campus in my nice townhouse. They were patient, they were nice, yet they know me. I don't try things unless I know I will be able to do them. I am an adult that learns differently, and I do not like to take risks that might expose my deficits. I know where I come from. I know my credentials. My third grade report card gave huge clues to my learning deficits. Capable, guesses when working, well, what do you do when you don't know the stuff? Learn something new but doesn't process it and store it in the brain for future use. Well, if it doesn't stick, what do you do? And insecurity plays a part. Well, don't you think so? I mean, these are amazing observations. I deeply appreciate my third grade teacher's observation. My high school transcript indicates a grade point average of 2.7 and a combined SAT score of 700. At that point, 700 was the highest score you could earn on one test. No wonder the Division I basketball coaches stopped calling when they heard my scores. If we could draw a picture of the hidden disability of my brain, it would be like a drain. Some information runs through my brain like no strainer or no stopper. Some information runs through my brain like a mesh strainer. Other information runs through my brain with holes, and so some information stays and some information runs out. Other information, it's like a tight stopper and nothing gets out. The problem is, I don't get to go to Lowe's and pick my stopper. And 75% of the time in this academy, and all academies that I've been in, what I got ain't what I need. And I wonder, does my brain belong here? Yet somehow, I have figured out how to beat the academy. And beat it I have, because I know that if you're willing to work really, really hard and show up, and if you're willing to work really, really hard and be nice, and if you're willing to work really, really hard and be responsible, and if you're willing to work really, really hard and be organized, and if you're willing to work really, really hard and be motivated, and if you're willing to work really, really hard and produce something on time, one will earn something, and this is what I have. So why in the world would I enter a place that causes me to work relentlessly hard and really, really, really hard? To illustrate, if you do the math on all those reallys and you add them all together, it's like 18 hours work for a 2-page paper, or 45 hours to complete a 5-page paper. And I will not tell you how long it has taken to complete this paper. You would have diarrhea with me. So why would I ever enter a place where I lose more than I gain? Melissa, you just graduated in May with a degree in special education. You're not able to remember much of it. It's like it's gone, said my PhD advisor in 1999. And he was absolutely right. And I'm like, Dr. Kaufman, the degree is on the wall. Why would I enter a place where I fear every time I enter, I'll be caught? A place that said my first semester of seminary, Melissa, I find myself in a bit of a quandary in deciding how to respond to your essay. Why would I enter a place that requires me to do things that I do not do? I did not read my first book cover to cover with my hand on a Bible till I was in 11th grade, and it was the autobiography of Earl Hershiser. Who knows who that is? Woohoo! Look how many people don't. Professional baseball player for the Los Angeles Dodgers. First of all, which female ever reads a book on a baseball player? And how in the world would that ever help you in a seminary? Why would I enter a place that about 10 years earlier diagnosed me as a person with a learning disability, which brings it with it the realization of social deficits? I would encourage Melissa to grow in her social skills, particularly in reading social cues. A quote from my fourth semester of seminary that was on one of those course evaluations that they just slide in your mailboxes and you have no idea are coming. Why would I enter a place that stirs up all the inner basement of my soul? Shame, fear, feeling alone, thinking one is dumb. A place that says, just do it. And I am so grateful that that Nike slogan is gone, because don't you think I would do it if I could? Why would I enter a place that wants to say to you, you look normal. What the hell is wrong with you? Were you awake when you did this? My interpretation of a comment on my first semester of seminary. Well, the truth is, I often wonder, why am I here and what am I doing? Yet I'm crazy enough to follow our holy friends, who thankfully know more than I do, and who recognize that all that I have said to this presentation is not a hyperbole, and that's the largest word I'll share today. Everything is the truth, as is this. My fourth grade teacher said, worked hard, cooperative attitude, and made good progress. Friends, in whatever ministry setting we are in, we will find people like me. People who have a way of knowing that is different, who need us to seek to understand their ways. Over the past 3 years, one of my ministry settings has been the seminary. And during this time, I began to recognize that no matter where I am in ministry, I will be with people with learning and functioning challenges. So as part of this project, I interviewed 4 EMS students and realized I could have interviewed others about their experience as students with learning and knowing differences. What saddens me the most about the past 3 years is that it was not until this project that I realized the depth of suffering that my companions and I face every day. Friends, in this building, there are individuals who struggle with physical issues of memory, processing, hearing, writing, executive functioning. That is, keeping up with the system that humans create, like turning things in on time, managing time. We also struggle with attunement. That means understanding what someone is saying, all of which are necessary skills to complete the requirements of a graduate degree. And we may be similar to our friends for whom English is a second language, realize quickly things are not the way they should be. Several of us were identified once we were in the academy. This creates many challenges, including emotional and spiritual anxiety. So one either seeks testing or tries to fight one's way through the system. And I've done both. And the truth is, one will have to fight really, really, really hard either way. And either way, one will need great self-compassion, corporate compassion, and abounding community support. I feel like I've had several letting in parties at Eastern Mennonite. The first was following my first semester. You see, I taught special education for 18 years, so I thought, oh, I've done this before, and I've hit the button. You could have gotten cheat sheets. Yes, there you go. I've done this before, and I know what to do. The problem is, I was no longer the teacher. I was the student, powerless, speechless, out of control. During the Christmas break, I made my way to the academic support office, the counseling office, and extra trips to spiritual direction. And from the academic support office, I got my one-sentence paper. One sentence. I've done IEPs. Those things are 20 pages. I got a one sentence when I thought, I've got power now. I've got a little voice. I've got a little control. But did I? Here is my one-sentence statement. To mitigate the effects of anxiety on her academic performance, she may initiate frequent conversations to monitor her performance in your academic class, especially in the subjective assessments. Based on this statement, where does your mind go? Now, I agreed to this. I take full ownership of this. No one else is to blame. And in fact, if I remember right, I thought it was pretty impressive. I was a veteran special education teacher. So I thought it sounds professional, and it would not stir up any lawsuits. And even after I realized what this sentence really says, we've left it as it is. Yet I think it's helpful to pause and really look at this. First of all, the burden is on the person with the disability. Haven't I already had to be vulnerable going to the doctor and the therapist and the psychologist and the psychiatrist and the academic support office? Second, we didn't tell the professors anything about my learning disability. How are they supposed to know what is going on? What would you say? Well, maybe this will help. I have a pretty average IQ. But my memory, as one of my dear members of my church says, it is pitiful. And she is a dear soul. My ability to recall information in the moment is in the 24th percentile. And almost before I can get out the door, down the hallway, to my car, to my study spot at Mr. J's, it has fallen to the 19th percentile. It's kind of like having a car with one good wheel. Not a good scenario for a place that requires a good set of memory tires. Yet the reading comprehension, my ability to guess, is pretty high. That's why I say, I use this term very carefully, that's why I say I feel very bipolar. So this can create what one professor commented on, you have good points, but work on creating common threads and a unified essay. And if I could, I would. One final thought about this sentence, I believe we actually did create a pretty prophetic statement, and I thank you for helping me. Let's put this in plain old good country English. This is the English that I like. It's called the Melissa English. What this is really trying to say, are you with me? Let me get back to my letting in parties. During my fourth semester, I presented a word study in the Basics of Biblical Language course on the word compassion. We needed to research compassion in both the Hebrew and the Greek. If you want to know those words, ask the people who teach it. I don't know how you say it. I have it on my paper for the requirement. But following the presentation, no guarantee it's right either. Following the presentation, as I began to sit down in my seat, I heard the professor ask, Melissa, I wonder why you did not make the connection with the Hebrew word for womb, which is related to the word compassion. I knew what she was talking about was in the Phyllis Trible book, God and the Rhetoric of Sexuality, which we had discussed several times. I also knew compassion is a really big S word in Greek that's translated literally means intestines, guts, or as the King James Version states, bowels of mercy. And in that moment, my guts were moved so much that I was moved to honesty, and I said, you have caught me. This is it. This is the disability. And the room of 12 was even moved. And you could hear a pin drop. Jesus' ministry was moved by compassion. And on many occasions throughout the gospel, we find Jesus feeling compassion for people in need. To feel in his gut the raw emotion, vulnerability of the other. We find him moved with compassion when he saw the crowds. He saw the sick. He saw his followers. He saw the woman and the debtor and the blind man and the leper and the lost and the boy and the widow and the beaten and the prodigal son and the woman with the limited ministry that's in the addended Bible, probably somewhere between Acts and Revelation, in the book of Melissa, chapter 27. Jesus saw these individuals on the margins. I believe Jesus felt the amount of self-compassion needed by those of us with disabilities to keep going. As we all do, we need to be grounded with reminders that we are all made in the image of God. We are of worth. You and me, the person on your left, the person on your right, the person you passed as you walked in here, and not only are we of worth, but we have something to offer that matters. All of us. And as one professor said, what you have to say is important. We need to hear your voice. Without your voice, we are missing a voice of God. Jesus did not just feel in his gut. He acted from his gut. Friends, when our bowels are moved, we know it. Just ask me. It takes longer than peeing. It requires us to slow down, sit down, and as the Latin word for compassion means, to be with. When I let my professor and classmates into my world, the room was silent, but it was not empty. My classmates and even professor felt with me and moved with me. And together we sought to understand the situation, embrace the learning opportunity, and move forward in a life-giving way. The text messages, the calls, the emails, and words of support allowed me to move into a new orientation of my story. One where now I seek to not hide behind my disability, but to live with it. And I mark that moment, that holy encounter, as an Exodus moment. Many people have much to say about compassion. There's a handout back at the door. This section gets this much from me today. That has a great resource of a video called Fat City that I would highly encourage you to check out. Or maybe if you didn't get it, let me know and I'll get it for you. Anyway, here are great people who talk about this stuff. Marcus Borg, Brené Brown, Sue Johnson, Kristen Neff, Henry Nouwen, John Vinair, and many others. Nouwen shares of the movement of compassion as, I do not know what to say or what to do. Never have I expected you to. But I want you to realize that I am with you and that I will not leave you alone. And Sue Johnson asks, will you be there for me when I need you. So what have I learned about disabilities, compassion, and community? When you are in a storm, you will get wet. And you will have storm damage to clean up, which includes the lifelong process of self-compassion. What do I want the Academy to know? They'll have to ask in the Q&A. What do I want you to know? My last 2 points. My first point is that compassion does not come from institutions. It comes from individuals. In the fall of 1999, while working on a doctoral degree in special education, I stood with fear and trepidation in the doorway of one of the leading experts in the world on learning disabilities at the University of Virginia, and I confessed, I can't do this anymore. He said, Melissa, I'm so glad you've come to me because I could not come to you. Something is not right, and I want to help. And for the first time, at 27 years old, I got grace. In other words, Jesus had kissed me, and it did not happen in a sanctuary. It happened in a public state institution, not a private Christian institution. How could this be? Well, maybe because the professor was Mennonite, his last name was Kaufman, it started with a K, or maybe it was because, there you go. Maybe it was because he had to find a way to get me off his class list so the university would look good. I don't know the dynamics, but for the first time after nearly 23 years of schooling, someone got me. And I call this kissing Jesus. Being willing to hear what Jesus heard, willing to be at the intersection of pain and possibility, and sitting at that intersection with the person. The truth about my holy encounter at UVA was that Dr. Kaufman and I had a 5-minute conversation. And that's the last time I've seen him. 5 minutes. And that's all we had. But in that space, he was with me. He did not condemn me. He did not reject me. He did not kill me. He stayed with me in the tension of the reality. He stayed with my authentic being. He was with me. And together, we figured out the next step, and off I went to the hard work of self-care. My second point is that compassion happens in community. I call this the double bow movement. As I said earlier, Jesus was moved with compassion. His bows, I might not have gotten in that class, but I got the bows today. His bows were stirred when he saw the other. And then he was with, I should have thrown with up there, capital, bold, underline, italics. He was with them. I thought at this place, well, first of all, let me just tell you, I did not know such words as Christology, ecclesiology, theology, eschatology before I came to this place. And the truth is, I don't know it as I leave. But I know there are some 4-letter words that if I don't know leaving this place, I ain't going to do anybody any good. And if I don't know about hope and love and with, I'm in trouble. This word with has stirred my academic curiosity enough to consider, I said consider, doing a word study. As the one with the struggles, I've had to be vulnerable, have a bowel movement on a regular basis, maybe so much that literally my bowels are irritated. When the system does not choose to move with me and lives into the letter of the law, I experience rejection, frustration, and depression. And on so many occasions, I've allowed myself to feel that it's my fault. If I could just tie up my boots a little tighter, and it is no coincidence that I started wearing boots that tied up while I was here, and do a little bit more, I would get it. And that is a lie. The truth is, I am not lazy. I am motivated. I am smart. I am responsible. I am organized. I work really hard. I plan ahead, and I do belong here, but every day I struggle. And so I am really, 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 really tired. And so the real truth is, double bowel movements give me the courage to keep going and making it through each hurdle, even though I know I'm a mirror to many of you. Kissing Jesus and double bow movements are communion moments, holy spaces of great vulnerability, spaces of holy confession, spaces of holy exchange, everyday ordinary interactions. And these are the moments, despite all of my tiredness, my double bow movements that give me life. And I don't just leave this place with life, but I leave it with abundant life. Solani, do you want to ask a question?
Sure. Thank you. You said a lot to us who are part of the Academy, but I know you have something more you want to say.
Well, yes. The beautiful thing about this seminary is I have free admission into the dean's office, and I deeply appreciate that. So here's what I cut out that I would say that I would want to speak into the Academy. First of all, I recognize it's been 40 years since the first disability law was created. About the time I was born. I call upon the institutions to pause and take a deeper look. Are we living into the letter of the law or the intent of the law? My experience has been that so often the disability statement is put into a syllabus the first time the course is created, overlooked when presenting a syllabus at the beginning of the semester, and it dies. I want to invite professors, and I actually invite anyone who lives in the realm of laws, that would be all of us, to allow statements, or whatever law we live under, to be a reminder of the value of compassion, and to move to what might this mandatory statement become? How could this mandatory statement become a ministry statement that communicates, I am with you? It's a perfect time for the semester to introduce at the beginning of the semester, hey, I'm with you. I want this to go well. Here's how we do it. In fact, let's have a 5-minute conversation. What do you need? What is most helpful for you? What is not helpful for you? The second thing that I would draw attention to is, this blows me away. I have a deep desire for there to be mandatory teacher training for all university professors. Think about this. The highest level of learning does not require trained or certified teachers, and I've paid a whole lot of money for this one. And the one I paid no money for, that I was in, not only do you have to be certified, you have to do ongoing training. This means, as a special education teacher, and a teacher with 7 certifications, as the one with the disability, I sat under the tutelage of individuals with no official pedagogical training. I invite institutions to consider in-services on pedagogy, best practices, reflective feedback, and teaching diverse learners. One resource this institution has is a fine education department. Just don't tell them I sent you. They have way too much to do. A third topic is connected to campus services. EMU offers amazing services in physical, emotional, and spiritual needs. Yet going to these spaces can feel like going to the principal's office. And who wants to do that? One of the things I discovered in my conversations with my classmates, you probably could take the number of trips that I made to the writing center, to the counseling office, to spiritual direction, add them all up, and it equals the total of everybody else. We don't go. I recognize that most graduate students are adults, and adults are supposed to have big boy and big girl pants on. But sometimes we still need a little nurturing. Some of us can find these offices. I couldn't find the writing center the first time. Some of us need a map. A map's not going to help me. Others of us need a companion. I will admit, it was not until the late part of my 5th semester, that's like December, that I found the writing center. How could this be? I'll tell you, I really don't want to go to places that are going to expose me. And by 42, I'm tired of going to places and not getting what I need, and I'm tired of going to places and being the only one having a bowel movement. Yet, once I got my big girl pants on and I went, I found a double bowel movement in that space, and I'm extremely grateful for Anna Mary Johnson, who met me there and walked with me. This is supposed to be a Q&A. Who, Brad, will you ask me the second question? Thank you. This is what happens when an institution gives you 30 minutes to work on something you spend thousands of hours on. All right, so here's what I discovered. The question was, what have I discovered in this process? So I met Anne-Marie, and the first day, I can tell in 10 seconds if you're with me. And don't try to do it, I just know if you're with me or not. And I could tell her, and I asked her by the end of the session, how do you get me? I'm not going to tell you the answer to that question. But the fact that I could ask that at the end of one session. So what happened was, I do my blah, 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 blah. And she does her amazing da-da-da. And then we had time, and she said, well, let's talk about my freshman English class. And I'm going, oh, my lands, this is going to be ugly. I know what this is like. And she's describing my English experiences. And I said, well, something. I don't remember what I said, but this is what happened. She created a meta process. And so she's taken this and has gone back to work with her freshman students. It says, one of the most valuable parts of education is to step back and reflect on what you are learning in the process, about the content itself, and about yourself as a thinker. And then she's had students reflect on these questions. This allows her to get to know the students, and this sends a huge message to students that I am with you. If that's the only thing I leave at EMU, thankfully for that. Lonnie, do you want to say anything?
Am I supposed to say something?
Yes. This is a scripted Q&A. Sorry.
Oh, do you want to say something?
Yeah. Yeah.
Moratorium.
Yes. Okay. So Lonnie read my paper. Many people have read my paper. Lonnie read my paper, and he took from this that he thought I was asking for a moratorium on comments. I think it's a great idea. I'm not asking for that, but here's what I am asking. Comments are judgments. I want feedback. Because feedback points me to my next, like, hurdle if I'm climbing up a ladder. I want to get to the next place. But a comment, and I will tell you, the one made my first semester set me back a whole semester. It took me a semester to get over that one. So what I would encourage people to do is pay attention to, are you making a comment or are you making feedback? Dorothy Jean. Oh, Dorothy Jean, you are with me. This is my advisor, by the way. She is with me. This is a beautiful question. So the difference is a feedback points me in a way of finding the next hook to improve my situation. Where a comment is a strict judgment on what I've already done. Comment is on the past, a feedback moves us to the future. And thank you for that question. One of the beautiful things has been watching people journey with me and learn how to be with me. I could write a whole other paper on that. All right. How many more questions, Nathan? Two. Gordon, you're the last one. Who would like one? Are you going to ask a question and do the last one? I get two questions. Hold it, Gordon. You're the last one. Hey, I do want to go to Eric. Eric presented yesterday on space, and one of the things that I took from his presentation was he made this comment. I don't know if this is it. You can take mine or use yours. It doesn't matter. Is that education is about giving people access to the material. So it is about giving people a book. But it's also about helping people to access that material. Just hand me a book, I'm in trouble. But if you can find a way to help me access that book, that is super, super helpful. Okay. We are pressed for time, and I am open to having any conversation with anybody at any time. But Gordon, because he's in my small group, gets to have the last question.
Thank you.
Thanks, Gordon.
It's been a
you don't get the bread.
That bread.
That bread. You see that bread, don't you? So on every slide is bread. How many people observed that? Yay. If you didn't, it's okay. So, two things. First of all, if you're doing nothing after this and want to join us at Mr. J's for lunch, feel free. Second, one of my own self-discoveries, and I could write a whole paper on the process of this, came out of counseling where I totally realized that as much as I have been beat up, I still have life. And I give God the glory for that, because in this room is the leaven of the bread. So thanks for being here.